audio performance is copyright 2012 by Dr. Gwendolyn Huxford and may not be retransmitted or rebroadcast in any format not previously and specifically authorized by the creator.
All right, as always, I'm going to start with some lecture for a while. That way, people who are still late getting to class from wherever they're at can just get notes from people instead of missing something more important than notes, although notes are really important. All right, this is where we ended up, right on the external morphology fiber diameter page. Does that look right? Okay, that's what I remember as well. And we ended up by doing a quick comparison of the different properties that this particular morphological feature might create, right? So a really big fiber, is going to have different properties than a really small one. And hopefully for most of you, it's like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. I haven't thought of it before, but it makes sense. And we discussed the, end uses that this might change, right? So a really small diameter fiber might be great for something like a silky evening gown. A large diameter fiber might be really great for luggage. All right, but the size of the diameter is not the only thing that we would be looking at if we went to all of the trouble to actually slice a fiber along its cross section. That is a lot of, it's really hard. I took a class in this, and I don't think I ever actually managed with the supplies we were given to get a really good cross section. You use a needle to punch the fiber through a cork, and then you shave a slice of the cork off, and you have to shave a thin enough slice that you can see through it in the microscope, but you have to hope that you shove the fibers through really, like, long ways. It would be a lot easier if you, like, encased them in plastic or something and then shaved it like that, but we didn't have that. So those photographs in your text or on the Textomania website that show the cross section, or ones I'll show you in the lectures when we talk about different fibers, those are actually pretty impressive. It's hard to look at a fiber under a microscope in that direction. We're going to talk about the microscopy of fibers in your next quiz. I see that about 25 of you didn't manage to get your first quiz taken, and I sent you an email telling you basically that's the whole point of the drop three. So that's okay. I understand some people had last-minute snafus with getting their lab materials. Other people, you know, it's just getting organized is hard, and that's okay. But I just want to make sure you let me know if I can do anything to help you out other than bug you. So the next quiz, I see a few people have actually already taken that quiz, and it's about looking at fibers under the microscope. Because although the burn test can be a great way to identify fibers in a big grouping, right? So the example would be the my grandmother was a member of the Natural Fiber of the Month Club. I'm serious, it was like a real club. You get something in the mail, like with swatches on it, and then you pick them out and fill out an order form, and they send you fabric, right? So she had a room in her house just full of fabric. So I drove away with my car just full of fabric, because the assisted living didn't have room for it. And I pulled up to the dock there of the at the back of the Salvation Army, popped in the cigarette lighter in the car, right, to get that warmed up, and then just used the cigarette lighter to do a burn test on every piece of fabric. So the only synthetics that I kept out of her huge stash were the ones that were like lining fabric that matched. And so she had a really beautiful tweed, a lavender tweed, and she had lavender lining fabric. I saved that. But if it was just random polyester or any synthetic. So the burn testing is really a great quick way to identify fibers by their big groupings. You can say, oh, that's a natural fiber versus a synthetic. Oh, that's cellulose versus protein, right? So that's handy. But we use the microscope to really get down into the fine details of which fiber is which. Even there, most of the manufactured fibers, if you look at them under the microscope, they look the same. So most of the manufactured fibers have a, you know, some kind of a round cross section. And you're like, well, okay, I know that's not natural because nature doesn't make anything that perfect, but which one it is? Then we have to use the solution or solvent testing, which will be the subject of your third quiz. So So when we look at the cross-section besides the diameter, we just want to know that what shape it is. And the shape of the cross-section, if we're not talking about a natural fiber, the cross-section in a natural fiber, the shape of that has been dictated by nature. And when we talk about each of the natural fibers, we'll talk about the particularities of the cross-section that nature dictated for that fiber. But in manufactured fibers, the MF, just to remind you, stands for manufactured, we're in charge of that, right? We can change the shape of the little holes in the metal plate that we use to extrude the fiber through, right? Anybody here have that toy when you were a kid, that Play-Doh toy, that you could like put the, was it yellow? The piece of plastic maybe or something? And then, so you put the Play-Doh in and you put this plate down and it had a hole in it, right? And maybe it had like little tiny holes and you put in your yellow Play-Doh and squeeze it down and you could make spaghetti, right? And then make little red meatballs, okay, and make a blue plate and serve your brother spaghetti. Okay, or you can make flowers, or you know, it had different cross sections, right? Well, as simplistic as that toy was, it was actually introducing you to extrusion, is the fancy name for this. Yeah. So, depending on the shape in the plate of your Play-Doh toy, you'd end up with a different cross section for the Play-Doh. Okay, I don't know what you'd call that—the toy. You know, it's just the goo that you're going to play with. So we have the round. And we have the oval, which has been ever so slightly flattened. We've got the kidney bean shape, which in a synthetic is an imitation of the kidney bean shape that we see in cotton. And sometimes we imitate a natural cross-section because we're literally trying to trick people into thinking that the fiber is a natural fiber. So sometimes we'll pick a natural cross-section because we want to, you know, disguise it. Other times we pick a cross-section from nature because it had properties that we realized were good. And the example of that would be this one right down here. This is a type of trilobal. There's trilobal up there, although it looks more like a flower. This trilobal here has really good luster. And it turns out this is roughly, with some irregularity in it, the shape that we see for the cross-section of a silk fiber. This would be like a rayon fiber right here. This very irregular surface, very jaggedy, reflects light, but it scatters it all over the place. So that fiber would seem comparatively dull versus the same fiber that was made with a nice round cross-section. So if we realize, like, oh, this fiber's too shiny, we want to rough it up a little bit, we could make it jaggedy and the light will bounce off in every different direction. This round one here is very fairly lustrous because the light is bouncing off in an even way. But this trilobal here is the most lustrous because, in fact, the concave shape of the fiber on that one of three sides is actually focusing the reflected light. How many people have a satellite dish on their house that they use like to get television? Okay, a few people. Yeah, some people live in dorms where, you know, there's a satellite dish somewhere. But so this dish, right, it's like a bowl, and then it has a little arm that sticks out over the bowl with kind of a round, looks like almost like a hockey puck anymore. Boy, remember the day when to get satellite, it had to be like this big? You'd drive by people out on their farm, and they have these huge, you'd be like, you know, wow, the Johnsons are doing really well. They've got satellite. Okay? Everybody else is just has rabbit ears. And okay? So this big or little satellite dish, it's a concave shape, and what it does is it takes the signals from space, right, it gathers them in a big bowl, and they bounce off of the surface of the bowl, and they all aim towards the same place, right, so they're bouncing off, and they're all aiming towards the receptor, which is suspended over the center in the right spot, so that it can pick up all of the signals that have now been concentrated. In the same way, the purpose of this trilobal fiber here is to serve kind of like a little concave mirror. It will gather all of the light and it will focus it. And the idea is to focus it right here in this receptor, right there. I'm pointing at my eye. I'm trying not to poke myself. Okay? So what we see is a flash of light. So once we explored a little further, we realized that it was the cross-section that makes silk so shiny. And if we could imitate that cross-section in synthetic fibers, we could make synthetic fibers that had the shininess of silk. There are a few other properties. You'll notice a couple are a little more important, the hand and the bulk. Cover is a property that just has to do with how much space you can cover with the fiber. And so which of these cross sections here do you think gives the most cover, or gives pretty good cover? If we looked at these five that are up here, the round, the oval, this is not an exhaustive list, but it's just what I've got here. Which one do you think has pretty good cover? For the weight of the amount of fiber that we have, it's going to cover more area. Well, the round one isn't bad, but you see this oval one here, or maybe that dog bone one there? It's about the same amount of fiber, but it's been squished or sort of flattened out. So we need less of the fibers. It's almost like 1.5 times as wide. So we can lay those fibers out on the flat there and actually cover a little more ground with the fibers. So that may be occasionally why we want an oval or a dog bone surface. Although, look at that dog bone. It kind of has a bit of a concave. So whereas the oval won't reflect light and concentrate it, the dog bone would. So really the big difference between those two cross sections is this one's going to be shinier. I hope all my blah, blah, blah has given you time, and I don't see that many. Oh, you've got a little bit. You have some right there. Very good. Okay. She's made some drawings. I didn't blah, 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 blah all this time, just to entertain you. Oh, wow, your drawings are really good. Check that out right there. Okay. Yes, as a matter of fact, there will be drawings like this on the exam. I might show you a drawing and ask you, I could show you those cross sections and ask you which one would be more illustrious, right? So you want to make sure and do some drawing. It's a really good way to learn, right, if you're doing extra drawing. All right. Here is the other issue with the cross section. We call it surface contour, because the surface contour is basically the idea of the cross section extended beyond just that one slice. So in this case, we look and we're like, oh, okay, well, a dog bone in its contour is what we would expect. It just continues to be this sort of flat concave surface. But this one here, which is kind of my attempt to draw a cotton fiber, while it has a kidney bean shape, it doesn't stay static. That groove in the one side there doesn't just continue flat all the way down the fiber. It actually has what we call a convolution. So it has a twist, kind of like a ringlet would have, so that that grooved interior actually turns down the length of the fiber. Okay? FYI, she was really quick and clever and was able to download a copy of the PDF that I put for the online students right before I put the power of the protection on it, because actually, I'm not chewing you out, I'm just explaining to everyone else in the class who can see that you have a copy of the PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. She can't do anything with it, so she can't print it or copy or paste from it, and she won't be able to have one for exam two. So I'm not going to take it away from her, and she's not in trouble, because she was clever. She was in the website really quick the moment before I remembered to click the button saying that only online students could have the PDF. So just in case y'all were jealous and wonder, like, no fair, where did she get that? Okay, it's just her happened to be in the website at the exact right moment. I don't give out the PowerPoints to people because I want you to come to class and I want you to draw drawings. So I hope that even though you're looking at this, you're still going to write notes, right?
I'm taking them.
Super. Okay, and you're still going to draw some drawings?
Yes, I will.
Okay, good, because I really honestly believe that drawing the drawings helps you learn. I just noticed that everyone behind you was like, hey, okay. Now, here is an example of a surface contour that you would not, again, necessarily be able to tell from the cross section. So if I were to cut this wool fiber, it's my attempt to draw wool fiber, if I cut it in half, right, I would see a round cross section. I'd be like, oh, okay, it's really going to be pretty smooth and shiny. When I look a little ways down the length of the fiber, then I realize, oh, actually, no, it only just looked round because of where I sliced it. If I follow down the length of the fiber a little bit, it's actually got these cuticles on it that kind of make it like a thatching on a roof. Oh, you all have seen these pictures in the magazines, right? They show you these microscopic blow-ups of the hair to prove that, like, their hair product. Haven't you seen those? Like, they have the one that's all roughed up and nasty looking and pitted and stuff, and then the one next to it looks all smooth and beautiful and perfect. You know that there isn't a hair product in the world that can actually repair your hair, right? It can glue everything down, you know, with like a synthetic polymer, you know, like nylon or polyester or something like that, just glue it down so that it doesn't stick out again. But it didn't actually fix your hair, right? So if your hair was kind of roughed up because it was warm, when the hair gets warm or full of water, it will swell a little bit and the cuticle will stick out. We'll talk about that when we talk about how we felt wool. But that's a good thing to think of when you think of the surface contour, that the surface of the fiber could have features and details that we can't see in the cross section. Now, there's another important detail that we can see if we look along the length of the fiber that we actually use to identify manufactured fibers over other natural fibers such as silk. So if I were one of the lawyers working for the Federal Trade Commission and somebody said to me, I think this product has been, you know, a wedding dress maybe. They said this was silk, but I did a little burn test and it didn't burn like I think silk should burn. I think that this company is trying to criminally defraud me by mislabeling this fiber and charge me a lot more for what's essentially a pretty cheap manufactured fiber. I, as the lawyer, I wouldn't do it myself. I'm a lawyer. I'd hire someone at a lab to look at that fiber under a microscope. Actually, I had a student a few years ago who did a project on mislabeled fibers. You know, there were companies that were implying that this rayon from bamboo was a natural fiber. Right? So they were saying, well, you know, but it's made from bamboo. Well, if we actually had a fiber that was natural, we would expect to see some kind of irregularity in the surface of the fiber. So you put it under a microscope and look at it. And in fact, the student, all she needed was a piece of tape. She just walked through the store, you know, like Whole Foods or Whole Earth Provision Company, other places that are selling the mislabeled fiber. Just take a little piece of tape. I mean, what's an employee going to do? If you just walk up and look at a product and go, oh, wow, I really like that. Sample it, stick it on a little card that you've written down what the product was, right? Take off the fiber, put it under the microscope, and what do you know? She saw these little specks. These little specks are caused by what's called delusterant. What do you think a delusterant does? Makes it less shiny. Okay, so you were able to totally break down the word there. Deluster, luster meaning shiny, and then de meaning not, okay? So we actually add these little specks of usually mineral, very often titanium dioxide. Anybody have any thoughts as to what else we might use titanium dioxide for? Yeah, in sunscreen, and when it's put in makeup, they'll call it like the mineral foundation or that sort of thing, but oftentimes if they add enough of it to the makeup, they can put an SPF on the makeup. Yeah, so how many people here wear a sunscreen that has titanium dioxide in it? Okay, a few people. You know why they know that that's what they're wearing? I like to pick up sunscreens that have these physical sunblocks. This mineral, the titanium dioxide, it doesn't degrade or decay. So unlike the chemical sunscreens that absorb radiation until they give up their poor little chemical lives to the radiation, and the radiation basically destroys the chemical and then you have to reapply the sunscreen, the mineral sunscreen or the titanium dioxide or zinc oxide will stay what it is. It's a little tiny piece of rock, right? Radiation isn't going to hurt it. So you end up with longer continuous protection. And if you're kind of vain like I am, I'd really like to look younger than I am for a long time, right? So I've been wearing sunscreen, plenty of it. You know, I know I'm fooling myself when I imagine that students think I'm in my 20s, okay? But I actually turned 40, and I'd like to credit sunscreen as being part of what helps me stay young-looking, right? And, of course, I also know sunscreen is an important part of protecting myself from cancer, okay, which is also a big concern. So the titanium dioxide that we use in our sunscreen, it absorbs radiation and protects our skin from the radiation that would damage our DNA and cause cancer or wrinkles, right? Well, in a fiber, we didn't put the titanium dioxide in there necessarily to give the fiber sunscreen, okay? But we did put it in there because the radiation and the visible light are right next to each other. And in the same way that it absorbs the radiation, the UVA and UVB, so another great thing about the mineral sunscreens is that they're full spectrum. Just in the same way it absorbs the radiation, it absorbs the visible light too, right? So it's sort of this dark speck, and it makes the fiber less shiny. So if I see this under the microscope, In no way it is a natural fiber. I don't care what you said. I don't care what the people that you bought the product from told you. Okay? You have been fooled. Natural fibers don't have freckles. Another thing you can look for are the striations, those long, even lines that are straight that go down the surface. There isn't a natural fiber out there that has one of those either. So right off the bat, if I see those, either speckles or striations on a fiber, and I'm a scientist that's been hired maybe by the Federal Trade Commission or a competitor who's suing because somebody's mislabeled a product, I can write a nice report saying that I can verify that this material is not made from natural fiber. Don't even need to explore any further as to what it actually is made from, because those are not naturally occurring features. I'm kind of highlighting an important thing about the whole point of textiles. There's a ton of money involved here, right? People are making money from selling things that have an appearance of quality, like silk. They don't want other people coming along selling some cheap, shoddy alternative that costs a ton less to make for the same price. So a big part of what we work on in textiles is just protecting the economics of textiles.